Welcome to this episode of Out of the Best Books, the podcast where we deep dive into classic literature and have conversations about what we've learned and discovered along the way. We love all things books and reading, and we want to share our love of the classics with you. We hope to inspire you to read along with us and join in the conversation. I'm Amity.
And I'm Laura. Let's get started.
So we are covering chapters 10 through 16 of Jane Eyre today. This is good stuff. It is all really good stuff, but Charlotte Bronte, just as an author, I don't know. Maybe some of it is because we've read so many classics that this is just so easy and flows so smoothly in our minds, or it's just the way that she writes. Okay. Okay. You'll have to point out the parts that to you are not so easy.
I'll be reading. I'm like, okay, yeah, this, I get this. It makes sense. It's flowing. And then there's a couple chapters that we covered today that I was like, I have no idea what they're talking about. I'll get to that though.
Point it out. Okay.
Like, what was going on? Helen had just died. That's it. They'd found her wrapped up in Helen's arms. And luckily Jane didn't wake up that way, but they carried her off. Mm-hmm. Interesting thing is this book is totally her as an adult looking back.
Okay.
And there's an example of that at the end here, like talking about how for 15 years, Helen's grave didn't have a marker and now it does. And so that's just like an example of how this is a mature Jane that's looking back on her life and telling us about it.
Yes. And that's true. I love that. There's like that little nugget of insight right there. So in chapter 10, basically Jane, she kind of jumps ahead about 8 years, which is how long she's now been at Lowood. And during that time, it actually like improves, it seems like, you know, it's not perfect by any means, but I think she comes to where she actually enjoys it. Like she has a closeness with some of the teachers and she learns a lot. And some of the girls, she becomes very good in her studies. She's very smart, to where she becomes, I believe, a teacher as well. But she does get to the point where she's just kind of done being there. She has reached her full potential that she can reach at Lowood. And she knows that she needs to reach greater heights and do bigger things. And there's this whole great world out there. So at this point, she's got to be what, like 18 or 19? She's ready to move on. She's like, you know, graduated high school, time to go.
Well, it's so, like Miss Temple leaves and she's like, I'm done. She's like, without her here, I have nothing. And she had been like copying her personality, Miss Temple's personality. Mm-hmm. And when Miss Temple left, she was like, I need to be me. And Miss Temple was very like, her name indicates it. She's like the example of religion and goodness. And Jane is like fiery,
mm-hmm.
and like opinionated. And what was the word that Mrs. Reed used? Passionate. And so when Miss Temple leaves, she's like, hey, I have to be me and I got to get out of here. Yeah, she said, I had undergone a transforming process that my mind had put off all it had borrowed of Miss Temple, or rather that she had taken with her the serene atmosphere I had been breathing in her vicinity, and that now I was left in my natural element and beginning to feel the stirring of old emotions. I need to be me.
Yeah, she does. She needs to be her. And so she knows she needs to go out into the world, which is a very brave and bold move for a young woman who has never been anywhere but two places. One place where she was pretty severely neglected and abused, and the next place where she was abused in some ways, but then she also began to thrive. She really has no worldly experience at all. And so it's extremely brave and bold for her to decide, I'm going to go out in the world and I'm going to figure this out. So what she does, she did a little bit of research and she decides to advertise. Because she figures, I could be a governess, you know, this could be a thing. So she decides to advertise in the Herald, the newspaper. And she's like, you know, I may as well go for it. Who knows what's going to happen? But she said she had her advertisement written, enclosed, and directed before the bell rang to rouse the school. It says, a young lady accustomed to tuition, in other words, like instructing, is desirous of meeting with a situation in a private family where the children are under 14. And her justification for that was she was like, well, I'm barely 18, so the kids probably need to be somewhat removed from me in age. She's qualified to teach the usual branches of a good English education together with French, drawing, and music. Most people would have thought that was very comprehensive. And she signed it JE. She did not put her name on it. She didn't think it would be a good idea for anybody at the school to know that she was advertising for this. After some time, she's checking at the post office and she finds that there is a response to her advertisement. It says, if JE, who advertised last Thursday, so it wasn't very long, possesses the requirements mentioned, and if she is in a position to give satisfactory references as to character and competency, a situation can be offered her where there is but one pupil, a little girl under 10 years of age, and where the salary is £30 per annum. JE is requested to send references, name, address, and all particulars to the direction Mrs. Fairfax, Thornfield, near Millcote. She gets a response to her advertisement. And so she's, basically, hey, we're willing to look at you, give us your resume and your references, and we'll hire you as a governess. And so this is really exciting. And she decides to go for it. And shortly before she's about to leave, she actually gets visited by someone she has not seen in a long time. It happens to be Bessie, who was really the only person at the Reed's house who was ever nice to her. And she wasn't really initially nice to her, but it's like she kind of came around and realized that Jane had been treated very badly.
Yeah, like just as she's leaving.
And I think I always imagined Bessie as being older, but I think she was actually quite young. And so I think a lot of it too was like inexperience and just not knowing. She had gotten married since Jane left, and she has two little kids. She brought one of them with her. They have this sweet little conversation, and Bessie is really impressed with Jane. She's like, wow, like you've learned a lot. She's like, your paintings are amazing. You can speak French really well. Like, that's a great advantage. And it really was at that point in time. So, and she's like, really, you're doing so much better than any of the Reed kids. Like, they're kind of just rich and spoiled. And the boy gives his mom fits all the time. Because what we find out, we never really know about Jane's, the heir side of the family. There was some conjecture. They thought that they were just poor, and they wouldn't want anything to do with her and vice versa. While she's been gone, somebody came to the house looking for her. And it was her father's brother said that he had come to Gateshead and wanted to see Jane. He was going on a voyage, so he couldn't stay and he couldn't go look for her anymore. He just had that one lead where she might be. He goes to Gateshead, she is not there, and he doesn't have time to go looking any further because he's supposed to be on a ship headed to this distant island. They believe he might be a wine merchant or work for a wine merchant. So basically, where the chapter ends, except that, well, at the very end, she gets on a coach and starts heading to Millcote.
So they wrote to Mrs. Reed and she returned, Jane might do as she pleased. She had long relinquished all interference in her affairs. Like that was her response is like, hey, I wrote her off a long time ago. Go do whatever you want. But
Which sounds really cold, and it totally is, and it's probably kind of devastating in a way, but it's also like freeing. It's like, all right, sweet.
there's another sentence. I have a question for you. So it says,
Okay.
as she's getting ready to leave, she says, a phase of my life was closing tonight, a new one opening tomorrow. Impossible to slumber in the interval. I must watch feverishly while the change was being accomplished. So I want to know if you've ever had a, like, can you think of a time in your life where tomorrow everything's different? Like, I'm going to bed tonight and tomorrow, like, I'm thinking about like the day I went to college. Like, you're packing your bags or and you're like, tomorrow's different.
I mean, there's been a lot of those. I think kind of like anytime we've done a big move, like across states, like when we moved from Utah to Oregon, that was really hard for me. But it was even harder to move from Oregon to Utah.
Because Oregon's
That was
awesome.
like, Oregon is awesome, and the people there are just next level amazing. And I can't talk about it very much because it just makes me cry. That was very difficult. It's not just the hard things that make you go, okay, here I am today, and tomorrow's gonna be so different. There's good things too, like, but it usually makes me nervous, like the big changes for sure. I had never really had a job outside the home since having my kids until like a year and a half ago. And it was just part time to start with. And so that was a big thing for me. And I, because I was like, oh my gosh, this is such a big commitment. And what if I can't do this? And what if we can't handle it? Well, it's eventually turned into like this huge full-time, lots of responsibilities thing. And when that transition happened from the part-time to the full-time, that same thing, I was like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? But we're such adaptable people.
Yeah.
Like humans just are adaptable. Not we're adaptable people, humans are adaptable. So.
Well, you just wait until Tate is packing his bags the night before you go to mission. For me, that was the biggest thing, was like watching Charlie pack his bags, and like we were sitting in the living room and he comes out and he's just crying and he's like, I'm gonna miss you guys. And you know what I mean? Like, and you take over the airport and then they're like, they're gone. Like, he's gone.
They're like actually gone. Yeah.
Yes, and like gone,
For
where
2 years, and that's a long dang time.
yes, I mean, it goes. I mean, looking back, it was fast, but looking forward, it was not. And anyways, I just,
No, it seems like forever.
and it was like he left a little boy, and I knew that when he came back, he wasn't going to be like a little boy anymore. And it's true, he's a full grown man that lives in my house. I love him, and he's gonna leave again, and I'm actually really sad. So it won't be as hard because he can come visit and we can talk all the time or whatever. But that was
Well,
hard.
because again, you have adapted. You've
Yeah.
adapted. Like Katie has left and she comes back. Body and your brain know what to expect a little bit more.
I don't want any of my kids to leave. We can't, ugh,
I know.
stay forever, but don't at the same time.
I know. I read about the cultures where it's the tradition to go live with the in-laws. You know, sometimes the man goes and lives with the wife's family. Frequently, it's the woman goes and lives with the man's family. And I'm like, I would actually die. Like, I would actually kill someone, probably. So that would not be good. At the same time, like, I totally wouldn't mind if my, you know, as long as there was plenty of space, I
Your
wouldn't
kids
mind if my
stay.
kids, if my kids like brought their families to live with me. I would love that.
I'm pretty sure one of our kids is going to live with us.
You think?
That's all right, though,
Not as
because
fun.
this child is very pleasant and not a problem. So it's totally fine. They're welcome to live with us forever. I just need to teach them how to do some more chores. That's all.
Well, that's what I always read about, like having an adult child live in your house. You kind of have to just have some understandings and maybe draw up some contracts.
Yeah, you're gonna live here. You're gonna do something. That's all I care about. And then this child is so sweet and does not cause any trouble, but like is the queen, it's not Charlie, of saying, okay, and then not doing it, like agreeable and like,
Like really sweet
yes.
and then totally doesn't do it.
Yes. But we love
That
her.
for you. Yes.
Okay. So chapter 11, Jane arrives in Milk. You say it, Milk it? Milk.
I've admitted that I'm listening to this
Okay, so how
and
do they say it?
the narrator is very British and she says it milk it.
Milk it. Okay, like almost like CUT. Okay, so she arrives in Milk it and nobody is there to meet her, which would be really upsetting. You're like, okay, now what? And so she sits down and finally asks somebody about Thornfield. Like, have you ever heard of Thornfield? They're kind of like, we don't know. And then somebody says, oh, I'm here for you. So there is somebody there for her. And it's the driver, right? That's going to take her out there. So she kind of asks, like, oh, how far is it? How long is it going to take? And the drive out to the house is 6 miles. And he thinks it's going to take like an hour and a half. And so all the way there, she's like wondering what Mrs. Fairfax is going to be like. She thinks that Mrs. Fairfax is the owner of the house, the woman of the house. So she arrives at Thornfield, and which is funny because that name, Thornfield, is like a what do you call it? Like a symbol for who lives there. Thorny, hard to get close to. You know what I mean? Like you can't,
I
and I
would
was thinking,
definitely describe Mr. Rochester as very thorny.
yes, and like who names their house Thornfield? That is not welcoming. That's like stay away.
No.
I picture all these like rose bushes or something with thorns like all over the house, so you can't cuddle up to it. I don't know.
Yeah, no, totally. Like I imagine sort of like the the animated version of Sleeping Beauty, when Maleficent, like, I think she puts like all those thorn bushes around the
Yes.
castle, and there's not even roses, it's just big thorn bushes.
This is like not an inviting place.
No, not at all. Terrifying.
So she gets there, a girl ushers her in, and Mrs. Fairfax is in the house and she's sitting by the fire knitting. What surprises Jane is that Mrs. Fairfax like treats her like a visitor. I think she's expecting to go there and be like expects to be treated like a servant or, you know, and Mrs.
Yeah.
Fairfax is treating her better than that. I thought this was funny that she has another one of the servants bring in a little hot negus. So that is a hot drink with lemon, sugar, and spices. I looked
Ew.
that up. That sounded yummy
Oh,
to me.
it actually really does.
Okay, so Jane asks her, like, when am I going to meet this my pupil, my student? And she, of course, assumes that the little girl is Mrs. Fairfax's daughter. And then Mrs. Fairfax kind of goes into how happy she is that she's there and that she, Mrs. Fairfax herself, had been super lonely and she has nobody to talk to. And she's like, these servants here, they're not really that interesting to talk to. Like, I'm so excited that you're here. And Mrs. Fairfax takes her to her room. Her room is small with modern furniture and decor. She finally is able to rest. Like, she feels like she's been traveling and for hours and hours and hours. And she's like, I'm finally in my own space. I can relax. She gets herself ready to come out and she's excited to go meet her new student. And I thought this was interesting. She kind of talks about like how she wishes she looked different. She says, I sometimes regretted that I was not handsomer. I sometimes wished to have rosy cheeks, a straight nose, and small cherry mouth. I desired to be tall, stately, and finely developed in figure. And then she's like, okay, but I thought I looked respectable enough to come and meet Mrs. Fairfax and my new student. And she's like, at least she won't recoil from me with antipathy. She's not going to be like, you're so, I don't know. She's not going to be scared of her.
Terrifying.
Well, it's kind of funny. And I get the idea that Jane is like small, right?
I think that she is,
And
yes.
strange looking, kind of.
I mean, I don't think she's like strange looking. I think she's just kind of plain.
Mr. Rochester says she's like otherworldly looking.
Well, that's true. That's true. I think she must, there must be some features that are quite striking, but not beautiful.
Okay.
So at least not in the traditional sense.
So she learns from Mrs. Fairfax that Mr. Rochester is the owner of Thornfield and that Mrs. Fairfax would really like him to spend some more time there, but he doesn't come very often and when he does, he doesn't stay very long. And, Jane learns that Mrs. Fairfax is just the housekeeper and that the little girl is Mr. Rochester's ward.
Yes.
So she is similar to Jane in that she's an orphan. She comes running in and she is speaking French, which is funny because I was telling you earlier that I was listening to a podcast because I had one more chapter to read today where she reads the text and then kind of would occasionally would like explain things. And this was interesting. She would read the French and then she would say the translation. And I was like, why did I never think of looking up the translation of that? Because I get frustrated when it goes into the French and I'm like, I have no idea what she's saying. But I mean, you could totally type it into like Google and it would tell you what she's saying.
It will totally tell you what she's saying. That's which, yeah, the technology we have is amazing. Super quick story. So, where I work, we have a pretty decent size, like Hispanic population here, and quite a few of the Hispanics do not speak English. They'll frequently have somebody with them that can translate. But the other day we had somebody come in, a man who could not speak any English. He immediately asked if anybody did speak Spanish. And we have one girl who I think she must have served her mission in a Spanish speaking mission, but she was not there. And so we're like, what do we do? So he takes his phone over and he like types in his question on his phone and then shows it to me because he just put it in like, I don't know. It was very clear, so I thought that Google Translate was not that great,
It's
but it
pretty
was
good.
something that it like immediately translated from Spanish to English. And it's like, oh, brilliant. That works. So.
Yeah. We watch Sister Seeking Sister Wife. There's this couple that is like constantly trying to get women to marry them from Brazil, and they'll
Oh.
like go, it's quite entertaining. They
Yeah.
go visit the woman and they use Google Translate, and it's really fun.
Okay.
Like, seriously, can't find anybody here that will marry you, so you have to go to Brazil. Like,
Yeah.
there's something wrong with these people too. Like, seriously.
Yes, I think so.
I'll have to send you a clip.
You should. That would be entertaining.
Quite entertaining. So luckily Jane does speak French, so she understands what the child is saying. And then the child also has a nurse that had come over with her from France. And so she has this nurse, and then she has Jane, who's going to be her teacher. Mrs. Fairfax hasn't been able to communicate with the child. And so she's like, oh, ask her about her parents. Like, Mrs. Fairfax doesn't know anything about her. Jane asks her in French about her parents, and she says, I lived long ago with Mama, but she had gone to the Holy Virgin, which we find out maybe she's not. Mama used to teach me to dance and sing and to say verses. A great many gentlemen and ladies came to see Mama, and I used to dance before them or sit on their knees and sing to them. I liked it. Shall I let you hear me sing now? Totally typical little girl.
Yes.
So after breakfast, Adele, and her name is Adele.
Which I love that name.
She sings for Jane. She writes, recites poetry. They find out that Mr. Rochester had, like, when her mother had, which at this point we thought had died, Mr. Rochester had offered to let her live with him. And so he had brought her over from France. So the library room in the house is where they're supposed to do their schoolwork. And Adele is not used to working. Like, she's not used to doing
Yeah,
school.
like not at all.
No, she's kind of spoiled. So Jane kind of starts her out slowly and does as much as she can with her. Mrs. Fairfax, after Jane says, okay, that's enough for today, you can go back and be with your nurse, Mrs. Fairfax calls her into the dining room. And Jane kind of comments about how Mrs. Fairfax keeps everything so neat and clean, which brings her to the question of, okay, so Mr. Rochester, he comes home rarely, but it's always, Mrs. Fairfax is telling her this, it's always unexpectedly. And so Jane is like, well, what kind of man is he? Like, what's his personality like? Is he, I mean, you would think based on what Mrs. Fairfax does that he might be kind of strict, or I don't know, you want to say type A?
Yes.
But that might be how he is. And so Jane wants to know about that. And she says, and what's funny is Mrs. Fairfax doesn't really want to tell her what he's like. Or doesn't really have an opinion of him. She's just like, he is who he is. He says, oh, his character is unimpeachable, I suppose. He is rather peculiar, perhaps. He has traveled a great deal and seen a great deal of the world, I should think. I dare say he is clever, but I've never had much conversation with him. And then Jane's like, so in what way is he peculiar? I don't know. It's not easy to describe. Nothing striking, but you feel it when he speaks to you. You cannot be always sure whether he is in jest or earnest, whether he is pleased or the contrary. You don't thoroughly understand him. In short, at least I don't. But that is of no consequence. He's a very good master. Oh, he's good. I don't know what to say.
Well,
So.
it's funny because I think we learn as we go along that Mrs. Fairfax is very sweet and she's good at what she does, not like the deepest thinker or philosophizer. As far as like why he's unique and quirky, she probably just hasn't put a lot of thought to it,
Yeah.
honestly. She's just like, I just know he is. I don't know. That's
Yeah,
all.
she's like, well, he's treats me fine. It's fine. Like, he's just who he is. It's kind of interesting. So the Jane then gets a tour of the house. So she asks about where the servants sleep, and she's like, are there any ghosts in the house?
Yeah.
Because I don't really like ghosts. I've had bad experiences with them in my first house. So she's like, no, there's no ghosts. None that I've ever heard of, she says. And Jane's like, no legends or ghost stories? I don't think so. But this was interesting too. But she's like, the Rochesters, they're like violent in their regular life. And so once they die, they just kind of lay in their graves. They get it all out while they're alive. Okay. So as she's getting this tour of the house, she climbs up the stairs. It must be to the third floor. And she climbs up these stairs to look out the window. She hears this loud laugh. Like a strange loud laugh. And so she asked
Yeah.
Mrs. Fairfax about it. And well, she's like, did you hear that? And she says she had. It says, while I paced softly on, the last sound I expected to hear in so still a region, a laugh struck my ears. It was a curious laugh, distinct, formal, mirthless. I stopped. The sound ceased only for an instant. It began again, louder, first, though very distinct. It was very low. She was like, I could have told you exactly what room it came from. I knew exactly where this sound came from. Mrs. Fairfax kind of explains, oh, it must be a servant. We have this lady, Grace Poole. She sews in this room and it must be her. And so Grace Poole comes out for a second and Mrs. Fairfax is like, you need to be quieter. Stop making that. But it's not her.
Grace Poole? No.
Yeah. No.
Definitely not.
So I wonder if Grace is like, okay, I wasn't being loud, but she says about that, I really did not expect any Grace to answer, for the laugh was as tragic and preternatural a laugh as any I have ever heard, but that it was high noon and that no circumstance of ghostliness accompanied the curious. Now, what is that word? Catenation? I think I've heard that word before. Like, it's like a sound.
I am not totally sure because I'm like following along, but I don't know exactly where you are in the book. So would you spell it for me?
Yeah, it's weird. It's C-A-C-H. I-N-N-A-T-I-O-N. Catenation. I think it's just
okay. I think that word stuck out to me because I think she may have said it cockination, because I was thinking like cacophony. I remember thinking that when she said that, but it means to laugh loudly.
It says cackle, guffaw, roar.
Yeah.
Break up, die laughing, laugh one's head off. Yeah, so this curious, this strange laugh.
So it is like cackle. That's terrifying.
I know, but I would never have thought, reading that word, I never would have pronounced it that way.
Yeah.
Interesting. And the two N's are weird too, next to each other.
Yeah.
Anyways, like Mrs. Fairfax is like, too much noise, Grace. Remember directions. Like, you're supposed to be quiet up here. Okay, so they're, as they're coming down from this third story, they kind of just talk about Adele. And it kind of says, they reached the less creepy parts of the house. How did they say that? They said,
it's the light and cheerful region below.
Yes.
And you just feel for it because, like, you know how that feels. It's kind of awful.
I don't like scary things and I don't like being in situations like that. So I'd be like, let's go downstairs.
Chapter 12, she's kind of having a bit of a hard time because Mrs. Fairfax is just so sweet. Little Adele is very lively. And I mean, she's spoiled, but she still loves to work with her. Like, she has no real complaints about her situation. It's a good situation overall. But she also feels like she needs and wants more. Like, she feels very stagnant. There is nothing that is stimulating her brain. Like I said, Mrs. Fairfax is very sweet, but she doesn't challenge Jane at all. So her conversation is not, yeah, it's just not anything that will get Jane thinking. And she needs that. She's a very smart person. She's, well, like any human who just needs stimulation. We need to be growing. We need to be getting better. But it kind of also makes me think of like really smart dogs who are often the most difficult and the most destructive because they're so smart. They need something that's going to be challenging their brain, or they're going to start destroying things. Not that Jane is necessarily going to destroy things, but she's got to have something that's challenging her.
So our dog is totally blind.
Yes.
And we're working on our house. And so our upstairs is kind of dangerous. And so we have a gate at the top of the stairs and he has figured out how to open it. And I'm like, tonight, I'm like, he's blind. How did he figure this out? And Charlie's like, he has a lot of time on his hands. True.
Yeah. And they will. That's the thing.
Because I came home from work today and they have all these paint cans like placed around the gate to keep him from opening it. He's an Australian Shepherd. He's the kind of dog that if he doesn't have a challenge, he will figure one out.
Yeah. Well, they're really smart dogs. Yeah. They need that. So yeah, this is where she's at. And so I wanted to read this quote really quickly because I thought it was really good. It says, it is in vain to say human beings ought to be satisfied with tranquility. We shouldn't say, oh, you should just be satisfied. Things are peaceful. Be happy with that. She says, they must have action and they will make it if they cannot find it. Millions are condemned to a stiller doom than mine, and millions are in silent revolt against their lot. Nobody knows how many rebellions, besides political rebellions, ferment in the masses of life which people earth. Women are supposed to be very calm generally, but women feel just as men feel. They need exercise for their faculties and a field for their efforts as much as their brothers do. They suffer from too rigid a restraint, too absolute a stagnation, precisely as men would suffer. And it is narrow-minded in their more privileged fellow creatures to say that they ought to confine themselves to making puddings and knitting stockings, to playing on the piano and embroidering bags. It is thoughtless to condemn them or laugh at them if they seek to do more or learn more than custom has pronounced necessary for their sex. I'm sorry to have read the whole thing, but I thought it was so good. Like, that's so true. Humans are not designed to just sit still or to just be happy with mediocrity or to ever really be content, because if we were, we'd still be living in caves. No, we're designed to be progressing, to be challenged, to keep trying, to keep working. There, I think that there needs to be a limit to it, as far as like in your own personal life. I've not found that limit yet. There probably should be. And I also love what she says about women, because especially at that point in time, sometimes I'm like, oh, it would be so cool to live at that time, the, fun dresses and the things that they did. It was just so interesting. No, I
No.
would actually die. I'm pretty sure I would shrivel up and die. Especially if I time traveled back then, knowing what I can do now and then going back to that point in time, I'd be like,
What's interesting, this whole book is about a woman who, at a time when women weren't supposed to think like this, wanted to do more. Like, she wasn't happy with where she was at. She was always wanting to get out and do, especially like you said in the beginning, where she'd only really been two places, but she wasn't happy with it.
She needed brain stimulation. She needed, like, she needs to be challenged. She's out on a walk. I believe it's kind of like foggy, and she can hear a horse coming. I'm gonna say that again. She can hear like horse hooves on the path. Somehow the horse does not see her until it's like way too late. And so the horse gets surprised. It bucks off the person who's riding it. She is like freaking out. And it turns out it's a man who's riding it, and he's like sprawled out on the ground. He's cussing and swearing. She goes over to try to help him. She's like, "Can I do anything?" And he says, "You must just stand on one side." Basically, he's asking her to help him stand up. So this man is there. He's pretty grumpy because he's been bucked off a horse, and he doesn't tell her who he is, and she doesn't tell him who she is, other than that she says that she works at Thornfield Hall. He asks who the master is of Thornfield Hall, and she says, "Mr. Rochester's." He says, "Have you ever seen him?" She says, "No." And then she helps him back on his horse.
Yeah, she rescues him, which is also something that is very opposite of how this kind of literature would have been written.
Not vice versa. Some man coming along and saving her from horrible circumstances. She helps and saves him in a lot of ways. So anyway, she's quite baffled by this exchange. It's kind of strange to her, but also a little bit of excitement, right? And so she heads back to Thornfield, but she even says that she does not like re-entering Thornfield because when she gets back there, everything's just going to be stagnant. But she does go back, and she finds out that Mr. Rochester, the owner of the home of Thornfield Hall, has just arrived, and everybody's pretty excited about that. And also they find out that the surgeon has been called for because somehow Mr. Rochester has injured himself. So there is a quandary.
Yes,
So,
do you think that's why he's stuck at the house? Because he's hurt, so he has to.
Oh, for so long?
Yeah,
Oh, maybe. I hadn't really thought about that.
wonder if he wouldn't have stayed that long. Interesting. Now that he's there, Jane has to kind of move all the school stuff to another room because he's going to be occupying the library now for when visitors come in to visit him, which seems to happen a lot. Jane likes the house better now because it's livelier. There's people coming and going. It's more exciting, but she is having a hard time keeping Adele doing her work, partly because she's excited that Mr. Rochester was going to bring her some gifts. That night, the first night that he's there, once things kind of quiet down, she lets Adele go downstairs. And Mr. Rochester says that he wants to have tea with both of them. So Mrs. Fairfax tells her to go change her dress. She doesn't have very many dresses because she came from the school where she had everything was super simple. And she has a really fancy dress, but she's like, I don't want to put that one on. And so she picks the middle of the road one. And Mrs. Fairfax is like, you're going to want to wear a brooch. Anyway, she gets ready to go downstairs. She enters the library and he doesn't even look up. He's just totally not paying attention to her. And even when Mrs. Fairfax introduces her, he doesn't even look up at her. So Mrs. Fairfax is kind of talking incessantly about nothing, avoiding the silence that was happening there. The tea comes in. Adele asks, did you bring a present for Jane?
So awkward. Oh my gosh.
And he's weird. That,
Yeah.
this kind of bothers
He
me.
is.
And awkward. He's like kind of one of those men that you don't know how to take them.
For sure.
Like, I know a couple of them in my life, especially when I was a child. There was my dad's best friend was like that, where he was just always teasing you, and you just didn't know, like, when he would say things like how to take it. So, anyways, so she's like, did you bring her a present? And he's like, did you expect a present, Miss Eyre? Are you fond of presents? Like, it's just creepy.
It kind of is.
So I wrote this. He seems flirty as they talk about this
Yes.
gift. He says that, are you fond of presents? And then she says, I hardly know, sir. I have little experience of them. They're generally thought pleasant things. Seems like presents are a good thing, right? But he does finally compliment her on her work with Adele. He also says about Adele, though, she's not bright, she has no talents, yet in a short time, she has made a lot of improvement. So that's his compliment of her. Okay, so this is the part where they're talking a lot, is the part that I really struggled with understanding. I was listening to a podcast about these chapters, and the people were saying, I thought this was very ironic, that their conversation in these couple of chapters right here reminded them of Much Ado About Nothing.
Interesting, and I can see that.
Well, no wonder I couldn't understand what they were saying. Makes sense. So, yes. So he starts asking her questions about Lowood, where she had been before. He is appalled when she says that she had been there for 8 years. He asks about her parents. Just some of this was like they're talking about, do you understand the whole, like, for the men in green thing?
They're talking about, oh my gosh, leprechauns.
See, I had no idea. Why are they talking about leprechauns? Fairy tales?
Okay, because
He asks her, who are your parents? And then they immediately talk about the men in green.
he says, were you waiting for your people? Because he says, when he came around the corner, he said, I thought unaccountably of fairy tales and had half a mind to demand whether you had bewitched my horse. It's all the like Irish folklore, you know? Like the fairy rings and the banshees and the leprechauns and the I don't even know all of that. So he's saying that she is one of the fairy people, not fairy, FAIRY, but fairy, FAERIE. Does that make sense? So he's like, I think you were waiting for your people. She says, for whom, sir? For the men in green. It was a proper moonlight evening for them. Did I break through one of your rings? Did you spread that damned ice on the causeway? She says the men in green all forsook England 100 years ago. And so, yeah, whether it's leprechauns or just fairy people, but yeah, that's exactly what they're talking about. So,
Yeah, and this right before that, he says, no wonder you have rather the look of another world. I marvel
yeah.
where you had got that sort of face. So he asks about a relative. She says she has no relatives, that she had just come because Mrs. Fairfax had answered an ad. Mrs. Fairfax then starts complimenting her. Mr. Rochester's like, don't trouble yourself to give her a character. I shall judge for myself. She began by felling my horse. So again, he's teasing her, right? She saved him or helped him or whatever, but he's like, accusing her of making his horse, I don't know, freak out. He asks her about like reading. She says she hasn't read much. And I thought that was also very interesting because a lot of characters in books like this are really well read. And she is not because she doesn't have material to read. There was very little for her to read at the school. He asks about Brocklehurst and she tells him about how awful he was. He asks her how old she was when she was sent there. And then he asks her to play the piano for him. And then he's like, you're not really that good. Because I think she says, I'm not that good at it. And he's like, yeah, you're not.
Yeah. Well, they're both very honest with each other and straightforward.
He asked to see her paintings. Is there a significance to the paintings?
To what the subject material is?
Yes.
No, I don't think so. It's
Okay.
just that he's impressed because she didn't like model it after something. It just came out of her head.
Yes. Okay. I got that. And I like how she breaks out to the reader. While he is so occupied, I will tell you, reader, what they are. And first, I must premise that they are nothing wonderful. How did you have time to do it? And she's like, well, during vacation, I didn't go anywhere. So I had all this free time and I
Yeah.
just painted. So he keeps asking her questions about how she felt about the paintings. Were you happy when you painted these pictures? Did you sit at them long each day? Are you self-satisfied with the result of your ardent labors? He just seems very interested in her. And then he tells her, this is so interesting too. Like, I feel like he's like hot and cold, right? So he tells her to take Adele to bed, and then he just waves her hand at her, like he's had enough of her. Bye. Not even looking at her. He's like, we've had this great conversation, but go away.
See ya.
And she says to Mrs. Fairfax, you said Mr. Rochester was not strikingly peculiar. I observed when I rejoined her in her room after putting Adele to bed. And she said, well, is he? I think so. He is very changeful and abrupt. She's like, you said he wasn't weird, but he's weird. Peculiar means weird here. Strange. Interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, just odd.
Okay.
I think because I don't know, I think weird is like you wouldn't want to be around somebody who's like weird. He is very
Different.
peculiar. He's odd and he's
Okay.
different. But I don't think it's a negative thing necessarily. Well, I don't think she knows what it is yet.
And I like what Mrs. Fairfax says. Like, yeah, he might seem straight, peculiar to a stranger, but like, I'm used to him. I don't
Yeah.
even think about it. She's like, Jane's like, why? And she says, partly because it is nature and we can none of us help our nature. And partly because he has painful thoughts, no doubt, to harass him and make his spirits unequal. So there's a little like,
Little hint, and there's a lot of those along the way.
she's like, well, what about? Well, family troubles. We find out that his older brother, he had been like a outcast in his family. His dad didn't want to like separate the inheritance. And so he'd given it all to his older brother. And then when his brother died, then it became his. And so he didn't really have a relationship with his brother or his father. So that's what we learn about him, that
Yeah.
that's how he inherited Thornfield like 8 years ago.
Chapter 14. So she hadn't seen him for several days. And I think she realizes that she misses that. And so one evening he sends for her, and I guarantee she was a little bit excited. But he's like, basically, I've sent for you because I need you to save me because I've told Adele that she cannot talk to me about her presents. He's given her several presents. Of course, they're very, very nice. And so Mrs. Fairfax has sort of been banished to the sofa to listen to Adele talk about her presents. Mr. Rochester is like, no, don't talk to me about them. And so he's brought Jane down so that he can talk to her instead. He's like staring into the fire for a while. And so she's kind of like observing him. Remember, she's an artist. I think she's intrigued by him regardless, but I think artists especially will like really pay close attention to the way that somebody looks, taking all the details. And so she's looking at him and he sees that she's looking at him. So he's like, why are you staring at me? Do you think that I'm handsome? She's like, no. He's like, oh, you are very unique. Like, you didn't mince words. You just said it. She's like, sorry. I was like, maybe a little too forward. She's like, I ought to have replied that it was not easy to give an impromptu answer to a question about appearances, that tastes mostly differ, and that beauty is of little consequence, or something of that sort. And he's like, no, you should have said exactly what you said. I really like this idea that it's a little bit like Beatrice and Benedict. Although their conversations are much more substantial, they actually talk about some pretty deep things. He's like, I just want to talk to you tonight. And so he's like, so just speak. And she's like, well, what do you want me to talk about? He's like, I don't know, just talk. And so they kind of have this back and forth about her stubbornness and all these things. Finally, she says, I was just thinking that very few masters would trouble themselves to inquire whether or not their paid subordinates were piqued and hurt by their orders. And he's like, what? You're my paid subordinate, are you? Oh, yes, I'd forgotten the salary. Well, then, on that mercenary ground, will you agree to let me hector a little? And so it is really funny because it's like he's this really smart person. He does lots of things, but he's also a little bit of a space case because he like literally forgot that he pays her a salary, like that she is a servant there. And that's why I think she's a little bit baffled by him too, because she's like, why are you even talking to me about this? Like, I am your servant. And this is definitely a time where if you're a servant, you are not the master's equal and you should not assume that you are at all.
I like what she says. If he expects me to talk for the mere sake of talking and showing off, he will find he has addressed himself to the wrong person.
That a girl. That a girl.
Yeah, like that's not who I am. She's young and, he says, I envy you your peace of mind, your clean conscience, your unpolluted memory.
Because he's got a lot of stuff, and we're going to find it out. One thing that he observes, he says, well, she's about to go put Adele to bed because it's past her bedtime. And he's like, no, like, keep talking to me. He says, do you never laugh, Miss Eyre? Don't trouble yourself to answer. I see you laugh rarely, but you can laugh very merrily. Believe me, you are not naturally austere any more than I am naturally vicious. And so I think he's just really talking about how life has been hard for Miss Eyre. And life has been pretty rough on him. And he's learned to deal with it by being quite sort of confrontational, assaulting, very abrupt. But he's saying that is not his nature. And he's also saying that for Jane, she seems very serious. And he says, you are not naturally austere, not naturally grave, but she's had a lot of things in her life that have sort of led her to that point.
The one thing that bothers me about this is that he, I mean, clearly this was written in a time when this was more normal, but like he's her superior. And he's like, I don't like it when he's like, don't move your chair away from me.
Like he is very commanding. Because he
Yes.
knows.
And she has to do what he says because he pays her. They talk about that like when women are assaulted or harassed in the workplace, that a lot of times it's just unfair because of the play, the position that they're in. So chapter 15, so we find out that there's this whole story about Mr. Rochester and how he has been hurt. So Adele's mom was a he's telling Jane about this. Adele's mom was a French opera dancer and he was very fond of her. They had a relationship. And he was paying for her to live. He says, I installed her in a hotel, gave her a complete establishment of servants, a carriage, cashmeres, diamonds, dentelles, etc. In short, I began the process of ruining myself in the received style, like any other spoonie. I liked that word.
I know. Did you look it up and see what it means?
It says, sentimentally or foolishly amorous, a simple, silly, or foolish person. He has a relationship with her. He's paying for everything. One day he sees her exit a carriage and she is with another man. And so he kind of hides and waits for them up in the hotel, maybe her hotel room. He waits for them to come up. The chambermaid, he's hiding behind like a curtain. The chambermaid comes in, lights a lamp. They come in and she's wearing the clothes and the jewelry that he had bought her. And the two of them are talking about him. Can you imagine? And he says, unlike Jane, who told him point blank that she didn't think that he was handsome, this girl had been dishonest. And, to his face, she had said one thing. It says, neither of them possessed energy or wit to belabor me soundly, but they insulted me as coarsely as they could in their little way, especially Celine, who even waxed rather brilliant on my personal defects, deformities, she termed them. How
That's
awful.
so mean. That is so awful. Especially like with everything that he's done for her. She's just, that's awful.
It's sad. So Adele then comes in while he's telling this story. And so he kind of speeds it up. He's like, let me just cut to the chase here. He says, in that case, I must abridge. Opening the window, I walked in upon them, liberated Celine from my protection, gave her notice to vacate her hotel, offered her a purse for immediate exigencies, disregarded screams, hysterics, prayers, protestations, convulsions, made an appointment with the Comte. This was funny too. Next morning, I had the pleasure of encountering him, left a bullet in one of his poor etiolated arms, feeble as the wing of a chicken in the pip, and then thought I had done with the whole crew. It's like I did it. I washed myself clean of them. So the woman had claimed that Adele was his child, and he doesn't believe it. He doesn't see himself in her. And eventually, the woman runs off to Italy with somebody else
Yeah.
and leaves the
Yeah.
child alone. He offered to take her with him because he feels like it's his duty. He kind of feels like, I read somewhere that he feels like it will make up for the bad things that he's done if he does this good deed for the child.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, well, now you know this to Jane. I'm like, he's like, I think you'll leave too. Like, you're not going to want to teach her. And she says, how could I possibly prefer the spoilt pet of a wealthy family who would hate her governess as a nuisance to a lonely little orphan who leans toward her as a friend? Like, and she's just like her.
Exactly. I think she just relates to her. She doesn't know what how her parents felt about her. As far
Yes.
as she knows, though, they probably loved her. But she does know what it is to be completely rejected by the only people in her life that she did know as family. And that's exactly what happened to little Adele. She's completely rejected by her mom. Jane was completely rejected by the Reeds. I can't comprehend either of those situations, but
I know. But like it had the
yes.
opposite effect for her. So she just
Yeah.
feels strong, like a stronger connection to the little girl. So that night, she kind of thinks about their conversation later. He had talked a lot. She had talked very little, but she's starting to like him. And she is thinking that he's more handsome than she had thought. I like a couple of these sentences. So happy, so gratified did I become with this new interest added to life, that I ceased to pine after kindred. So she's like, I stopped thinking about, I believe this is what she means. I stopped thinking about like where my family was, or I had a new,
Have a new purpose.
yes, that's the word. And I wrote, uh-oh, says, and was Mr. Rochester now ugly in my eyes? No, reader. Gratitude and many associations, all pleasurable and genial, made his face the object I best liked to see. His presence in a room was more cheering than the brightest. I mean, the thing is, he's one of the first men that have ever been in her life, and she falls in love with him. But it just kind of, that's what happens when you're that age.
I mean, think about it. There's like so many issues here. She's super young. This is the first man, really, that is like decent to her that's been in her life. You know, there's Mr. Brocklehurst, and I'm sure there were other men like that, but like the first one who's like decent to her and likes to listen to her, likes to talk to her. And also, he is, I mean, let's face it, she definitely has daddy issues because there were never any daddy in her life. At all whatsoever. And so, and he's like, this guy is old enough to be her dad.
Mr. Brocklehurst is the only man in her life, and he was abusive.
Yeah.
Well, and John, I mean, her older
And
cousin.
then Robert. Yeah. Was it right? No, John Reed. I'm sorry.
I also like this too, that now she's starts thinking about like him leaving. She's like, she starts worrying about that. Like, he doesn't
Yeah.
stay very long. Part two of this chapter. Basically, she hears a strange noise. She tries to go back to sleep, but her heart rate is beating really fast, and it's 2 a.m. And she can't go back to sleep. The noise stops. Then she hears something that sounds like somebody had touched her door. It says, as if fingers had swept the panels in groping away along the dark gallery outside. I said, who's there? Nothing answered. I was chilled with fear. And then she thinks, well, maybe it was the dog. But dogs don't laugh.
No, that is so creepy.
What I think.
So creepy.
So then she thinks she hears something else. And she says, this is a demoniac laugh. I hate this. I can't read it because I
Or
don't know.
was it just demonic?
It says demoniac.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. So.
Low, suppressed, and deep, uttered as it seemed at the very keyhole of my chamber door. And then she's like, who's there? And then she thinks, I better go lock the door. And so she jumps up to lock the door. And then she hears footsteps going towards the stairs. And she hears a door open and close. And she wonders if it's Grace Poole. And she wonders if Grace Poole is possessed. She sounds like she's possessed if it is her. So she jumps up to get Mrs. Fairfax. But outside of her door, there's a candle burning and the air is smoky. So she puts on a frock and a shawl and she runs out. And Mr. Rochester's door, who is close to her room, is open and there's a fire in there. And he is laying on the bed, totally asleep. He won't wake up. She finds some water in the room. She throws it on him. And then she goes back to her room to get more water. And she comes back and she's able to put the fire out. And he finally wakes up and wonders why he's all wet. It took you a while to wake up, dude. It's totally dark. And so she has to bring him a candle so that he can see what has happened. And I just think this, the rest of this chapter is so creepy. So she tells him what she had seen and she wants to wake everybody up. She's like, we need to go get some help and tell everybody what's happened here. And he's like, no, we're not going to tell anybody else. He says, stay here, stay put. Don't go anywhere. I'm going to run up to the third floor for a minute. So he's gone for a really long time. And when he comes back, he says, oh, it was just what I thought. That's all he says about it. It's like, that's just what I thought it was. And when she asks, he says nothing. He won't really answer her. He just kind of moves on. He asks if she had seen anything outside of her door, if she had heard that laugh before. And she says, oh, it's just Grace Poole. And he's like, oh, yeah, it's her. Yeah. He's like, don't tell anybody about this. She wants to wake everybody up. And he's like, they're going to be up in a little bit, anyways. And let's just keep this between the two of us. Oh, and then the end of this chapter is very strange because he's like, hey, we've been through something together. Like, you're just going to leave? He's like, we should at least shake hands. He held out his hand. I gave him mine. He took it first in one, then in both his own. You have saved my life. I have a pleasure in owing you so immense a debt. I cannot say more. Nothing else that has being would have been tolerable to me in the character of creditor for such an obligation but you. It is different. I feel your benefit. No burden, Jean.
I do like how she's like, I'm not gonna stay anymore. I'm cold. She's like, dude, no, I'm done here.
She says, yes, cold, yes, and standing in a pool.
All
Anyway.
that water that she poured so that she could save his life. This is something that I don't understand. I guess I'm such a light sleeper. If anything is happening in my room or outside my room, I'm going to hear it. I don't necessarily know about noises that maybe I make or things that I do in my sleep, but anything that's happening around me, oh yes. And my kids walk up the stairs, I can hear it. And I keep my door shut.
I'll hear, no, because we live by a main road, kind of right off of a main road. And I'll hear like a siren, or we also live next to a church parking lot. And so a lot of times we'll hear people doing like cookies in the church parking lot or loud music. And sometimes I'll wake up and sometimes my husband will, and like not the other one. It's very
Okay.
strange. So I think it just
Interesting. You
depends
guys
on like,
like take turns.
or it's like what kind of sleep we're in. Or I'll hear a noise and I'll shoot up and be like wake him up. And he's not even like moving, you know? And I'm like, what was that noise? I don't know. It's just interesting that sometimes he'll do that.
Yeah, I've definitely done that too.
Living next to a church parking lot is extremely interesting.
I bet. I bet. I'm probably so frustrating sometimes.
Yes, because we hear a lot of stuff, especially like our bedroom is right next to it. And so it's like, people doing cookies in the parking lot, and we think they're going to come through our door. I mean, our wall, because it sounds like it. Anyways.
I bet there's probably like the revving of the engine and
Yes.
all that stuff. And it's
Can you hear them?
just,
The screech
and
of
it
the car.
really is just right there,
Yes.
like just a matter of feet away from
Yes.
your house.
And there's
So,
just a chain link fence and some
yeah,
bushes. I
that would
worry.
be very, di oh, yeah, that'd be very disconcerting. Good grief. All right. Chapter 16. The next day, Jane comes across Grace and she's like, so. What happened last night, you know? And Grace is very just sort of dismissive of it, basically. Jane doesn't think that she should say that she had anything to do with saving Mr. Rochester. The word in the servants' hall is basically that Mr. Rochester himself just woke up and put out the fire and all of that. So he's letting that be spread, which I think is interesting. And Jane is like, yeah, I'm not telling them that I had anything to do with it. She does tell them that she like heard a noise. And so she got up and locked her door because, as far as she knows, Grace is the one who started the fire. And she's like, I don't want her doing anything to me. So I don't want her to think that I had anything to do with anything or had any idea that it was her. But one thing that Grace says, she's like, it would be a really good idea for you to keep your door locked. She's like, okay. Right. And she's like, why is this woman even here? And she's like, okay, well, Grace Poole is quite a bit older than me. She's not very pretty, but maybe she used to be pretty. Maybe she was very intriguing. Maybe like Mr. Rochester keeps her around because he like likes her or used to have a crush on her or something. I don't know. She's trying to figure out what in the world this woman is doing here because as far as she can tell, she does nothing except sew sometimes. And it's not like she's sewing for people in the house. So it's a very huge quandary for her. A little later on in the chapter, she finds out Mrs. Fairfax, of course, is completely ignorant of anything that Jane may feel towards Mr. Rochester. And so she's just like, yeah, Mr. Rochester, he's like a favorite with the young ladies, and there's some beautiful young ladies that seem to be intrigued by him. He's quite rich. He may not be super handsome or super young, but he is quite rich, and he's very like charismatic when he's with these people. And there is one lady in particular, Blanche Ingram, who is just gorgeous. And Mr. Rochester seems to like her, and kind of she seems like him. And so Mrs. Fairfax describes her the last time she saw her, and this, and I think this is really interesting because this gives us a sketch of their standard of beauty at this point in time. Do you know what I'm saying? So it says that she's tall, fine bust, sloping shoulders, which I think is interesting. Like, who has sloping shoulders?
What does
Like,
that even mean?
yeah.
I mean,
But like, you see portraits and paintings of that time, and you're like, okay, those, yeah, those are sloping shoulders. But does anybody in real life have sloping shoulders? I don't know. Long, graceful neck, olive complexion, dark and clear, noble features, eyes rather like Mr. Rochester's, large and black, and as brilliant as her jewels. And then she had such a fine head of hair, raven black, and so becomingly arranged, a crown of thick plaits behind, and in front the longest, the glossiest curls I ever saw. She was dressed in pure white. An amber-colored scarf was passed over her shoulder and across her breast, tied at the side, and descending in long fringed ends below her knee. She wore an amber-colored flower, too, in her hair. It contrasted well with the jetty mass of her curls. So this is the time when it would be very stylish for lots of curls in the front with like lots of braids in the back. Because that's what the plaits are, is a bunch of braids that have been like arranged into what looks like a crown. And yeah, so she's very beautiful. And Jane is like, okay, well, with somebody like that, there's like no chance. She's like, what was I even thinking? And I think it's really funny because she basically like has a picture of herself and draws a picture of how she imagines Blanche Ingram to look like. And she's like, hey, whenever you're thinking that maybe he's got a thing for you, take out these two pictures and compare and contrast, and then you'll have a little reality check, miss. Like, no, he does not like you. There is no way. Yeah, which is really sad. Like, it's kind of hard. It's so heartbreaking. But you kind of get it too. Sometimes you just have to like accept what's in front of you. Fortunately, things turn out really well for her, but as far as she can see, there's no way that's going to happen. And so she's like, I just need to accept this and stop wasting my time fooling myself.
You know, I get the feeling when I'm reading this that, like, and I heard this somewhere today, that in the beginning of love or infatuation or whatever, it's all about how the person makes you feel about yourself.
Yeah.
You can grow to love somebody, and I think you can and you do, right? But in the beginning, it's like if he likes her, it says something about her.
Yeah.
That's why she wants him to like her.
Oh my gosh, that's like 100% true. And if he doesn't like her, then there must be something wrong with her. And
Right.
that's
And
how we feel. That's totally how we feel.
she's just trying to tell herself there's something wrong with me. So don't even get your hopes up because
Yeah.
look at me. And that's really
Yeah.
sad. Like,
Because
here.
he would definitely, there's definitely something wrong with me. So he would certainly see that, and there's no way he would like me. Oh, that's so sad. So true, though.
Like in the beginning of love, I mean, you really, that is what's happening, is they're making you feel something about yourself. And that's why I think when somebody starts to like you, and that's, I think, why you're like, oh, well, maybe I could like them.
Yeah. No, I remember through high school, especially, there would be times that I didn't actually like someone, but they liked me. And so I was like,
Maybe.
I could like them. Totally does. Because, like, oh, somebody finally just like sees me, accepts me, and loves me exactly the way that, well, not necessarily love, but you know what I'm saying? Has a crush on me, whatever, exactly the way that I am. And I don't have to be different or better or anything. Like, it's just unconditional. They like me. So, you know, I should like them back.
And I think that's how, like, as a child, my childhood trauma comes from peers, not from my parents
Yeah.
anyways, but from other people at school.
Yeah.
And so when you get to the age where you're like, when I was in high school, I had, thinned out, and I guess I wasn't as dorky as I had been as a child. But like when somebody likes you, and it doesn't even matter who they are, the person, like
That's the
a
thing.
couple of the people that liked me were nothing to write home about, okay? But it's like, oh, there must not be something wrong with me. That's sad.
Oh, it's so sad. I know. And you look back and you're like, what in the world?
That's why I want my girls to know, like, there's nothing wrong with you ever. And I think we're
Have high
better.
standards and don't settle. Good grief.
I hope we're better at that now as a society. I
Yeah.
don't know because I'm not in high school now. I was only in high school in the 90s, but I hope we're better. It seems like our kids are better at not bullying, but I don't know. Do you think that's true?
I don't know. I think especially middle school kids will always be middle school kids, and they're just awful. All
Yeah,
these
I'm probably
little Regina Georges running around, seriously.
wrong. Audrey was just talking about Regina George just yesterday.
How can you not when you're mixed up in middle school or high school at all? Like, there's always going to be Regina George or 20. So.
But like when I was, I mean, I hope, I guess I just hope that my kids don't experience what I experienced in like elementary school. I hope they don't.
Yeah.
But they probably do. And if they do, I hope they tell me about it because
I hope so too.
I have childhood trauma. And now I have. I can be a dork and I can embrace it and it's fun.
Oh
So.
yeah, being an adult sucks, but it also there's so many things that are way better
Better.
because you can be yourself for sure. That's so funny because it's so funny we're talking about this because I was seriously talking, not talking. I was thinking about some of my trauma that way too, where kids had been so mean to, like, just said and did some really mean things, and I'm like, wow, I just don't even care anymore.
No, but at the time it meant everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, kids can be mean, boy.
Yeah. Jeez.
I can't wait to tell you about this book I read today.
Oh, good. Today. You read it today.
Yeah, and it was so good that I ordered it for my niece and it's coming to
Oh,
her house
nice.
tomorrow. I was like, who would like this book? Okay, I think Rory would like it. So
Oh, that's awesome. I love
coming to her
it.
house tomorrow. It's called The False Prince by Jennifer A. Nielsen.
Ooh.
Have you heard of her?
Of course I've heard of her, and I feel like I've heard of that, but yeah, Jennifer Nielsen did the Words on Fire, right?
I have no idea. This is the first I've ever heard of her.
Yeah, I think she's somebody I would probably read anything by her.
It was very good. I actually, we just talked a couple weeks ago about how we don't listen to the Read Aloud revival anymore. And so I went and listened to a couple of episodes just
Oh.
because I hadn't for like years. And she was recommending page turners. That was the one of, she recommended three, and that was the first one she recommended. And I was like, okay, I'm going to read this today. And it was excellent. It was about a orphan boy who gets kidnapped by this man, and he kidnaps like three orphan boys or four, and he, like, in the very beginning of the book, he kills one of them,
Oh,
and then
wow.
he's like, okay, so and this happens at the very beginning of the book, the royal family is dead and they're buried under the castle and nobody knows it, so I have 2 weeks, I'm going to teach you three how to be princes, and you're going to come in and pretend like you're the prince.
Wow.
Was very,
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. Lots of like moments where you're like,
Oh, that's so fun. Okay, I'll have to look at it. Okay, I just looked her up. Yes, she's the one who wrote Words on Fire, which is the story of when, like, there was all these 1800s. It's Lithuania. And Audra is trying to save books and she becomes a librarian. Not like an actual librarian, but I think that's what they call it when they're saving books. Because they're trying to save them from the Russian Cossacks, because the idea is you get rid of somebody of a country's literature, you get rid of their culture. You destroy them. And so it's based on truth. So, yeah, super interesting. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I'm just looking on Amazon and I'm like, okay, apparently these are all middle grade.
Did you feel like that one was middle grade? The false print?
Yeah, it felt like maybe YA. It was a little bit like, even she said on the podcast that like I wouldn't give it to a kid that's like 12, maybe a 14-year-old, because it was
Okay.
kind of violent a little bit. And on Amazon though, it says like 10 to, or let's see, what age did it say? 9 to 12.
Yeah.
I really thought it was good. And it's a three. Oh, there's five books in the series. There you go.
That's fun. So if the first one was good, that you've got some more to go.
Yeah. And it was
That's
only 8 hours. So I
yeah.
was able to listen to it in like five.
Yeah. I think that that's similar to Words on Fire. And that's one that I totally just read myself. I think I would read it to my kids, but it's one that I read myself and I totally enjoyed it. So whether it's middle grade or YA, I don't care. It was really good.
Yeah, that one's also 8 hours long. She said on the podcast it was fantasy. I did not think it was fantasy, but like, I guess if
Okay.
you're in a castle, is it fantasy? I don't
Just
know.
if it's like a made-up world.
Well, it's a kingdom in a discontented kingdom. Civil war is brewing, but there's no like magic. That's what I think of as fantasy.
I knew too, or at least some sort of magical element. I wonder if in the next books there will be. But I guess at the same time, too,
Says action adventure fantasy. So there you go.
I don't think I've read any of these others, but just the one left such an impression that I knew exactly who you're talking about.
I would totally suggest her.
I actually did start to read a book besides what I'm reading to my kids, besides what we're reading for this, besides my 900 page personal training book and all that. But I hesitate to even say, I'm not going to say what it is because I cannot recommend it and I'm not going to. All I'm going to say is that my oldest daughter recommended a book. She owns it. And also remember that she is like in college. She's been to military boot camp, AIT, all that. I am not, and she doesn't live at home. So I am not at the point that I'm monitoring the books that she reads. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. She's like, Mom, you will love this book. Holy. What I will say is it's like a fractured fairy tale type of thing, and it is not good. Not good.
Is it Akotar?
No.
Oh, okay. Or a corn.
I'm sure there's a ton of fractured fairy tales. No, this one is definitely based on very well-known story, book,
Oh, okay.
movie, all that.
A well-known
Yeah.
fairy tale.
I don't know if you'd even classify it as a fairy tale. More like just a book that has become legendary. It's like very extremely well known. And it is a fantasy type of book, so maybe you could consider it a fairy tale. But
Are you liking it?
no.
Okay, darn
No,
it.
I told her I would read it. I've gotten in several chapters despite the awful writing. And when she asked me how I was liking it, and I ended after the chapter where it was just smut, like
Can
smutty,
you
smut,
hold it up
smut.
for me?
Yes.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Okay. Well, don't look into it.
Okay.
Well, maybe like ask Sydney if she's ever. But I was like, oh my gosh. Anyways, so she asked me how I liked it. And I was like, so I've been reading it. And I was like, I mean, just remember, like, I have a podcast where I talk about classic literature. So from a literary standpoint, like, it's a little, I didn't actually even have to finish my sentence because she understood right there.
Okay, can I tell
She
you what I'm super
knew
impressed with?
okay. What?
She's reading a book.
That's why I was like, I'm not gonna say anything negative. I'm not. And she wants me to read it. And I'm like, all right, I will. And so I did not say anything negative. I just said, just remember, like, I have a classic literature podcast. So that way, but I was like, I did say some positive, like, I dug for some positive things to say, but I did say some positive things. Because I didn't want her to think I was judging her, and I didn't want her to think that I didn't appreciate the fact that she's reading a book.
Yeah.
So,
Well, I'm reading a book that I'm going to talk about in a couple of weeks about getting kids to love to read.
yeah.
And that was basically the teacher's like, they have to read what they want to read. And
I will say, like, yeah, go ahead.
yeah, I mean, we could assign them reading, whatever, but they're not going to learn to love to read until they are reading what they want to read.
It is true.
So I'm just impressed because I have kids that won't read. But one funny thing is, years ago, I read A Court of Thorns and Roses, which short they call it ACOTAR, and I think it's Sarah J.
Yes.
Maas. And
Yes.
I didn't love it. I didn't really, it was okay. And also, I don't like the smut in it, right? But the other day, Charlie told me he listens to a podcast that like the guys in it were reading the book.
Oh my gosh, how funny.
Kind of to like make fun of it, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't believe Sydney reads these.
You're like, yeah. Horrible.
He's like, have you read
Well,
them? I'm like, well, the first one, yes. And I'm like, I didn't like it, but anyway.
yes. Well, I have read the first one as well. It was one of those I was like, I have, there's no motivation at all for me to pick up the second one.
No.
Like, not at all. It is like just kind of lame.
He did say to me though, he's like, supposedly they get really good as they go on. I thought
Oh.
it was really funny having this
No.
conversation with Charlie.
I bet. I bet. The fact that on the podcast he's listening to, the guys are like making fun of it. That is
Yeah.
hilarious.
They were like, they read it and then they recapped it. And I just, it was funny. And I love that my kids that read, I'm so proud.
Oh, yeah.
Even if they read smut.
Yeah, because at least they're reading. But yeah, and like several of my kids right now, like on Sunday, I was like, put down all devices and go get a book. And one of them, who's been such an avid reader, was like, I don't read that much anymore. I'm like, oh, I hate devices. I hate devices. Holy crap.
So the podcast for Read Aloud Revival that I was listening to was talking about how to read more in your, like how to do more of your own personal reading. And she was like, even if you want to read a lot, the devices are a problem
Oh
because
yeah,
so much
100%.
easier just to pick them up. And she was just kind of giving advice of how to like not to get good at reading really short in really short segments. Like even if you only have
Yeah.
3 minutes, it's okay. Pick up and read a page or two.
Totally. And that's what needs to happen is just carrying a book with you everywhere, pick that
Yes.
up and read it. And I've actually been really impressed with several of the people that I work with. I'll often go into the break room and all they have is like 5 minutes of break. And they've got a book that they're reading. And this is at a gym, you know?
Yeah.
You don't necessarily expect that.
I'm sure your son will come back to reading. There was years I didn't read, and so
Yeah, same.
especially even they're in high school and they have to read for school, like once you get done with school and you're not assigned it, I think that's when you're like,
No, it's real. Yeah, it's really true. It'll happen.
okay. So next week we will do chapters 17 through 21. They must be really long. Should I write for our books we recommend unnamed book?
Oh my gosh. Maybe just write Amity did read a book and we're not giving
Saying
the
what it
title.
is.
We'll not own it.
We're so happy you joined us for this episode. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte, chapters 17 through 21. If you have suggestions for books we should read and discuss, please email us at thebestbookspodcast@gmail.com. We would love it if you would leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and share our podcast with your friends. We want to inspire and encourage as many people as we can to read out of the best books.
As Thoreau says, read the best books first, or you may not have a chance to read them at all. See you next week.